Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators, and we've all been working for about the last 25 years, worked for just about every major publisher in the business, and together we've got published about 50 books, 50 children's books, and we've all taught illustration at the university level.
That's right. Each week we're going to come at you with a different topic. Sometimes we're going to fight, sometimes we're going to hug, but every time you are going to learn something new.
Oh, I like the hug part.
Digital hug.
Digital hugs. Because we are coming at you from Arizona,
Kentucky,
Utah, and
Kentucky.
Tennessee.
We've got the whole U.S. covered, though. We basically did that intentionally.
Right.
So our signal...
We need a 4- and a 5-point perspective in L.A. and New York. All right. So just a life update. I'm getting settled in Arizona now. I know we've talked about me moving. The bulk of the move has subsided. Like we're through that. We've got all the stuff in the house. The only thing that's left to be done is I have to go back up to Utah and get my studio, which I left over there with Will. And I just didn't have time to or space to pack that up. And so I got to do that. And then,
you know, we didn't know you were coming back for it. So we eBayed quite a few books.
No.
The Cintiq has. You have your drawing stuff there, don't you? Like your Cintiq and your computer?
Yeah, I have my computer. I have like just the kind of stuff I need to do work. But like already I'm on this illustration assignment where a handful of books that I own are in Utah, and I would love them for reference, you know, pull some parts from them and to use them for, you know, inspiration. So I'm just making do with this bare bones setup, and it's actually been nice to be a little minimalist, but I do miss having everything that I need, you know, at the ready, at my hands, at the fingertips.
Yeah. Mm. It's weird. When I had two studios for a little while, and that would happen all the time, as I'd be at one and the thing I need's at the other one. And it just creates a weird, you want to get to that state of flow, right? Where you're just making mm-hmm. something and you're like, oh, I want to do this. And there it is. And mm-hmm. if you don't have all your stuff, that gets interrupted.
Right. So now, yeah. So now it's like, you just pause and you're like, oh, that thing that I need is 700 miles away. I don't know how far away is Utah. 300
it's
miles.
Like 400 miles is all.
400 miles. Yes.
500.
So 600. I'm gonna have to make do without it. All right. So should any life updates for you guys or anything we want to talk about before we get down to this episode?
It's hot.
Projects you're working on. Things you finished up.
I am finally been given approval to go to final art on a book that I've been talking to you guys about forever. It's a hard one, and it went through a lot of stages. Probably the longest book I've had that has been in the sketch phase. Went through four rounds of full, you know, top to bottom changes and revisions, and I'm finally making finished art, and it feels so good.
Good. Awesome. That is a relief.
God, it's such a relief. And it's interesting because all that fine art stuff that I was doing in the interim is now working its way into what the finished art looks like a little bit.
That's cool.
Cool.
That's cool. And then, Will, what are you working on?
I finished writing a book that I'm not going to talk about right now. And I'm going to send it off to my editor soon. So
it's called What It's Like to Work with Two
Awesome Dudes. Yep.
That's what I was going to say.
Will's Mr. Positive today. That's great. Yep. Okay, cool. Well, today's topic is yours, Will. Did you, just a technical note, did you turn off the air conditioning there?
We did.
Okay, good, because I thought I heard it in the background. All right, I turn the time over to you, Will Terry. It is your topic. Set it up for us. Give us a nice, soft pitch, and let's go from there.
Okay. This one is coming to us from one of our listeners named Pavel. And I'm just going to read. It's a short little letter, and this kind of gave me the idea to go down this topic. First of all, he says, you are the best. So anytime you start off a letter like that, you got my attention. I'd love to hear more about the fundamentals. Episode number 2 is my favorite, and you scratch some topics that I'd love to hear more about, like How do you guys tackle fundamentals? How you felt the confidence and skills growing? How you handled the frustrations? Let us know more about the newbies you once were. So I decided to call this one.
Interject for people who haven't been with us for a while. Episode 2 is "Am I Too Old to Get Started?" That was also Will's.
It seems like a pattern of, you know, our listeners really loving the topics that I come up with. You guys should try that.
Early success, Will has not been able to maintain. Maybe this one is the one.
Okay, so I'm calling this one, when did you know you would make it? And I love this idea because, you know, every artist who decides to try or make art their main career or their living has to go through that unsure phase of, am I crazy? Do I think, you know, what gives me the right to even think this is possible? Right?
Right.
And sure. I mean, I can speak for myself. I grew up hearing the phrase, you know, starving artist, and, you know, thinking about how I didn't know any artists that were professionals growing up. You know, I didn't even have a role model that I knew of. All I had were, you know, the children's books that I saw at the library or that my mom bought, we had in the house. In my world, illustrators existed somewhere, but didn't know. Yeah. So I never really thought that I would make it as an illustrator, but I can tell you I've got some key points in my journey, and I'm hoping you guys can think of some on your journey that were kind of pivotal, where you thought, hey, maybe this is possible. Because I believe that you have to have these key moments in your life that kind of turn your brain on to going from I'm crazy to this is actually doable, to I'm actually going to try to do this, to I'm actually doing this, to actually I'm seeing my first success. Wow, I'm being successful at this a little bit, to I'm being successful moderately, and then finally, you know, making a living at it. So my first little tiny success story was, you know, I was the guy in school that did calligraphy. I was that nerd guy. I was the guy that the heavy metal rocker burnout F dude type guys would come to me to draw to letter Judas Priest on their jean jacket, you know, on the back of their jean jacket. Yeah. Got me out of, you know, got me some allies in that realm, you know, so that I could not worry about getting beat up. But I was doing calligraphy. It was something that was really appealing to me just for fun. I was horrible at it, but I loved the, like, I can't remember if my mom got me a calligraphy set one time. I don't remember exactly how I got into it, but it kind of became my thing and people started to know me for it. I was doing it all the time. And then one of my dad's friends who was a director for some company had to have these certificates done for work. And he had like 70 certificates to hand out to employees at some function. And he needed them lettered with calligraphy. And so he's like, well, I don't know. Can you do them? And I'm like, yeah, like it's a paid job, you know? And I remember I got it. I was like, I think I was like 14 or 15. And at the time I had a paper route and it took me like a month to make $70. And he was going to pay me $1 per name. So I got $70 in an afternoon from just writing these names down. And it was like, a spark went off in my head, like, I need to get me some more of that, you know?
Yeah.
And that was actually the first time I thought, wow, maybe there's a way to make money with art. But that was just my little infantile kind of introduction to it. How about you guys?
I have a story kind of like that. I mean, I had a bunch of, growing up, I had a bunch of little, like, I guess igniters to art, where it was like something would happen with me being creative. I'd get a positive response from either a parent or a teacher or a friend that would just make me want to do it more. But I always thought, well, I'm going to do this when I grow up. I don't know exactly what or how, but I'm going to do this. That all was like theory. Uh-huh. When I started putting things into practice, what happened was I had a really early good success where I got this job at an animation studio. And yeah, there was some hard work that led to me getting that job, but really it was something that kind of just fell in my lap. You know, the studio, I didn't have to move anywhere. It was in my town. It was in Phoenix, Arizona. They were hiring at that time. They were hiring people who, you know, had skill, but maybe not training, you know, like mm-hmm. they could do the thing. And so I got this job and they were training me on the job to do it, to work in animation. And I was like, this is it. Like, I'm just going to work here forever and work my way up through the studio until I'm like top animator. And not long, I was there for 2 years when the studio shut down and they laid everybody off. And I watched these people, like, I guess I'm moving back to LA, you know, or I guess I'm going to go find a job somewhere else. And some people are like, well, I guess, you know, that was a fun while it lasted. I'm going to go learn how to, you know, program websites, or I'm going to go take this job with my uncle, installing, you know, pools or something. I don't know. People just kind of went off and did things. And I was sitting there thinking, well, what do I do now? There's no other job like this in town. How am I going to make it as an artist? Like, what do I do? I guess I'll move to LA, but I don't know anything. This was pre-internet, really. Like, there was an internet, but there wasn't like
kind
of resources you had now. You still had to do a lot of
like 97, 98, 99, somewhere in there.
Yeah, this was like, I think it closed in 2000. Mm. So it was still really young. Mm-hmm. Nobody had a social media. So in order for you to, like, you couldn't just contact somebody on Twitter and say, hey, I'm looking for a job. You had to like know the person's email address if they had an email address, right? Not everybody did at that time. And so a guy in my neighborhood was like, hey, come work at this call center. And I was like, okay. We just do sales calls all day. And you could totally do that. So I went and interviewed for that job. And the whole time I was just like, I can't believe this is it. Like, I've given up on my dream. I'm just going to do this. I guess drawing could be a hobby, or I can, you know, still figure out how to do something on the side. I don't know. And in the interview, the guy was looking at my resume. He's like, geez, you know, you're an artist. You've been working at the animation studio. And he could tell that, like, I really wasn't into this. And he just point blank asked me, he's like, do you want this job? And I replied to him, you know what? I don't want this job. And I'm really sorry for wasting your time. And he's like, I guess we're done. And I said, yep, I guess we're done. So I got up and left. And I came home. I was already married at the time. We were just newlyweds still. And my wife was like, hey, how'd the job go? And I told her what happened. She's like, yeah, I didn't see you. You know, I couldn't see you doing that job either. And she said, you know what? I noticed that there was the Arizona Natural History Museum, which was down the street from where I lived. It was like a mile away. She said, I noticed they're building a new wing to the museum. It's like a dinosaur ancient history wing to it. And I'm sure they're going to need an artist to do something, paint murals or something. You should just go down there and see. So I went down there. I asked who was in charge of the project. I introduced myself. I showed him some of my work and told him, you know, I could do anything that anything remotely creative. And he's like, yeah, we could totally use you. There's like a handful of stuff. I've got a couple muralists who need an assistant. And then there's other odd jobs, creative jobs we could have you do. And he hired me for the summer. And I was doing everything that even remotely needed like a creative touch to it. So it was like, we needed a skeleton painted on the wall behind this, you know, giant alligator. We need to show what a skeleton looks like. So I paint a skeleton. Here's a 3D actual sculpture of a prehistoric scorpion, like an underwater scorpion. And they just got it from the model maker and it was like white, just blank white, and it needed to be painted. And they're like, go figure out what color this might be. Look at real scorpions. and you've got an airbrush and you've got paint, and go figure it out and paint this thing. And so I was doing that, and I painted a shark, and I sculpted rocks out of styrofoam. It was the best job. And at the end of that job, they're like, okay, well, you know, it's done. They had a big grand opening, and they're like, hey, we really appreciate it, Jake. Thanks for all your work. And I realized, like, right then and there, even though the job was ending, I realized there was always going to be work somewhere for someone creative, someone who had a creative eye. And so that job led to me searching like all these unconventional sources for just jobs where they needed something creative. And so I found my friend's brother-in-law had a Macintosh repair thing. This is before everyone called it Apple. They're called Macintoshes, right? And he would go and repair people's Macs. And he's like, Jake, I need business cards. I need a website design. I just need like a visual style for everything that I'm doing. And so I went and did that for a year and worked for him doing that. All the while, I'm just working on my portfolio because I really wanted to be a concept artist. And eventually I got this job at a game, like this little game studio in Phoenix that wanted, that needed like a low level concept artist. And so it was just this mind shift. It was right then that I knew, when I got that museum job, like, okay, I can do this. There's always going to be work if I don't mind like getting out of my comfort zone a little bit and hustling and being willing to like go meet people and talk to people and find these jobs.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool, because sometimes I've known a lot of people that have had these weird, like I call them weird art jobs. Mm-hmm. I just made that up right now. They're weird art jobs. They're like,
always calling that
since right now. But they're like, they're not a job that you would even know exists, but you find them somehow. So I have a former student who was making, he works for a grocery store, and he makes murals and stuff, because the grocery store owners are really creative and fun. And he'll do like spoofs on Saturday Night Live skits and stuff in the murals to sell specific things. So he'll make a little twist in there. And like he did like a poster for, you remember the Chris Farley skit where he's dressed up like a woman and he's like, he says, lay off me, I'm starving. You know, when that's like one of his famous lines. So he's got this poster, and that like people complimented the management constantly for the humor that they injected into this store. But that's a weird art job. Like, you wouldn't think of being an artist and working for a grocery store, right?
Right. And like, that's even like, you wouldn't even think to ask a grocery store who manages it, like, hey, I'm an artist. I noticed your store really doesn't have any sort of
funny posters.
Yeah. Well, if you, like, I mean, Trader Joe's does have that sort of precedent. If you have a Trader Joe's near you, there's always art on the billboard they do with the little pastels and stuff. And those are sometimes really cool. I remember the one in Pasadena. Of course, its proximity to Cal Arts and Art Center lend itself to that, especially while people are in school. And some of those billboards used to be gorgeous.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's good stuff, man. That's interesting, Jake. That's a lot of info. You know, before we started recording this podcast, we thought, or Will said, yeah, this is probably going to be a short podcast. But now I realize with Jake's answer that there are no short podcasts with us. We we can talk for a long time. So my first hint of this being a career was, I was living in Santa Cruz and I was working as a graphic designer. And this is funny because I've never told this story before. I've never even thought about it before. It's just been kind of erased from my memory about how my career evolved until Will asked me, you know, mentioned the podcast to me. So I was working as a graphic designer, and I had just started to do some paintings, and not drawings. I had no idea how to draw anything, but I had already purchased like 10 canvases, and I was just painting, like no sketch, no anything, just painting straight on the canvas. I had no idea what the process of doing an illustration was. And they weren't really illustrations. I mean, they were representational. So I guess they could technically be illustrations.
Did you buy a beret and a smock while you're at it?
I was going full tilt artist. Like, I don't even know really where it came from. I had never done that before. I had no sketchbook. I even though I was doing graphic design and I understood through that capacity that people are illustrators. I was not thinking, hey, I might become an illustrator. But so I had started doing these paintings, and I was doing graphic design in Santa Cruz. And at that time, that was when Silicon Valley was starting to explode. It was so easy to be a graphic designer. And all you had to do was just say you know how to use InDesign, Illustrator, and Quark Express. You guys remember that one?
Yeah.
And it was a layout program, and you could get work. And so I was doing all this work in Silicon Valley as a graphic designer, starting these paintings, and through this design studio that I was doing some just freelance graphic design stuff, very, very basic production stuff for, they had a job to illustrate a billboard 120 feet wide. And I was like, I can do that. I will do that. Like I hadn't done maybe four paintings. And so I volunteered for the job, and they're like, really? You paint
things? This is all you need to know about Lee White right there in that that interaction.
So it was so funny because I came home and I told my wife, and she's like, you don't know how to draw or paint.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because wives are really good at bringing us down, aren't they?
Yeah.
Bringing us down to earth.
She got the reality real quick. I was very excited about it when I came home because I had already done at least four paintings. So my career was solidly off to a good start. So I volunteered, and then so she tells me, she was, you know, asking me what I'm doing, and I got so nervous because the next day I had to go back, and that's when we were going to have a meeting with the client, and you know, there's a roundtable discussion about what this 120 foot wide billboard is going to be. I can tell you who the client was too. It was Avanti Hard Drives. They're still in business, making hard drives Dell and you know, all the major PC computer companies. And
you were a key part of that.
Oh yeah, I was. So the illustration was, there was this race, and all the other companies, just through logo, and I don't know how we got around copyright issues now that I think back on it, all the other companies that making hard drives were clowns. Like, this is the side view of a sprint, basically, like if you, 100-yard dash, and the Avanti company is in the front, they're crossing the finish line, they have normal, muscular, you know, human legs, and all the other companies are in clown shoes, like those big red floppy shoes. And I got so nervous because I didn't know how to paint. I didn't know how to draw. And this thing was going to be huge all over San Francisco and San Jose. And so I got home. I had never done anything digitally, but I had downloaded the first version of Painter. And so I did the illustration in Painter, and they were happy with it. I mean, looking back on it, it's horrendous in my opinion. I used way too much black, but it was passable, and it was a billboard. Like, we drove by it and took pictures of it and stuff. It was huge. And I was like, that was really fun. You know, and the good thing about your early art career is you don't know, ignorance is bliss. You don't know when something looks bad until later. Right. But the client bought it, and they were okay with it. And so I was like, God, I guess I can sort of do that. And it paid a bunch. I mean, it was a huge job. And so then another billboard came up. Job, and they said they had a picture cut out from Communication Arts Illustration Annual that was a Gary Kelly, is like, that's just one little character in one of these Gary Kelly illustrations where there's all these characters, and it's a jazz musician, and they're like, we want a billboard, but the whole band needs to look like this real super stylized, like, jazz musician. So I used that as the basis, and I painted this whole ensemble, like probably an 8-person jazz band, using Gary Kelly's one character as a guide for building out the rest of it. I didn't change anything, by the way. I used his exact character. I had no skill or ability to change much. You know, I mean, I was just flying by the seat of my pants. And that one went okay. And we took pictures of that one all over San Jose. And then through that, I got recommended to another design studio that I didn't know these people. And they wanted me to draw, speaking of weird illustration jobs, this was for a dentist, and I had to do a tooth riding a Harley Davidson holding a toothbrush. It's like the most goofy illustration. But I did that one, and I did that one in Illustrator. And so now I've done two Painter illustrations and and one in Illustrator. And right about that time, I, at this point, had maybe 15 paintings. And I started submitting that to school, saying, hey, this might be something that I'm interested in. But I still wasn't interested in illustration. I was going for fine art. That's what I was applying to as a major. It makes no sense. But since all I had done is illustration. But anyway, I got scholarship money immediately. And that was all it took, you know, between these three funny, weirdly acquired jobs and then the acceptance of the school with money attached to it, I was in. I quit my job and that was it.
That's cool. So you just saw, like,
you just,
oh, go ahead, Jake.
I was going to say, like, this is just, you believed in yourself. Like, as stupid as that sounds or as trite as that sounds, like, that is your secret, like, your secret superpower, Lee.
It's an unrealistic
belief in yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, but looking back on it, it was so sketchy. I mean, there's nothing guaranteed about any of it, but I don't know. It's interesting. And that maybe is where, if I can, I know Will was going to say, Will, do you have something you want to say real quick?
Yeah, I want to talk too, but you're interesting. So keep going.
Okay. I've said this before, but this is a perfect place to put this. In my opinion, there's four signals or four signs that you are doing the right thing and you're moving in the right direction. And those signals are, or four steps are, people gather around your artwork. They ask questions about it without you prodding. They like it on social media, whatever. You get a reaction out of people that you're not soliciting that reaction. They are just reacting. The second step is people start recommending you without you asking. They come up and say, hey, I want you to meet this person, or can I introduce you to this teacher, or whatever. And they start basically pushing you in a direction, saying, hey, you'd be good for this, you'd be good for that. That's the second level. Third level is you start to win things like contests or scholarships. They may not be monetarily based, but they do have a value. And then last, people pay you. And that's where you really know, because once people part with their money, they're serious about you. Mm-hmm. So those four steps, you know, have happened over and over, not just for me, but for students that I've seen going through the same, you know, cycle that we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of gauge that for yourself. If every single step you're met with 100% opposition, there might be something you need to pay attention to there.
That's good.
Yeah, I like that.
So there's another thing I was thinking of when both of you guys were telling your stories, and that you guys have in common is that you don't let this go to your head, but you were smart in your approach. Like, you were creative and you were smart in trying to figure out, you hadn't done the jobs before, but you came up with a way to be successful. And that is, it's hard to put it into words. So that's why I'm stumbling right now, but I can give it.
There's no roadmap.
Right. The example would be in the early days of Survivor, you know, the reality show. Yeah. They would start out with these different tribes and they would have to make a hut, right? And you get, as the viewer, you get the insider information of watching both of them and predicting who's going to succeed and who's going to fail, because you can see what both of them are doing. You can see the mistakes that one group's making versus the other. And I think the same thing happens with artists who are motivated and who are smart with their approach. When I was in school, I had this idea. I'm talking in college, in my art program. I had this idea that art was more valuable if it was completely original. Mm. And the problem that I had there was I didn't understand what original meant. I thought it was conjured out of your brain in a vacuum. You know, like, I thought it was possible to make a piece of art that was so original that no one had ever seen anything like it before. And I didn't understand that originality is taking existing ideas and recombining them in a unique way. So I would create, I would draw out of my head, and all of my illustrations would be horrible, and I would get these low marks. Meanwhile, I watched my classmates, especially the graphic design majors, because we were this was a general illustration class that we all had to take. And the graphic design majors were off balance because they're like, I'm not doing illustration. So they would just find an illustration and basically copy it. You know, you know what I mean? They would just, or change it a little bit. And they were getting these B's and A's. Meanwhile, I'm getting C's and D's. And I'm like, I'm working hard here. You know, I'm doing the work. These guys are copying over here. And finally, one of my teachers took me aside and just said, I can tell that you're frustrated. And he knew exactly why. And he's like, at the end of the day, we're grading on this criteria here, you know, on the look and the success of the illustration. Just because you tried harder doesn't mean that you have something more of more value. And an analogy that he used was, if I want a swimming pool hole dug in my backyard, right? In your world, if you choose to use a spoon, I should pay you more than the guy who comes with a backhoe. It takes you, you know, it might take you 6 months, but it might take him a few hours, and you think you should be paid more, you know?
Right. Smart argument against an hourly wage, but yes.
Right. So fast forward to the next year, I did what I call a pinnacle piece, which is the, you know, a piece that you've outdone everything you've ever done in your life before. I mean, it's a couple of steps higher than anything you've ever done. And it was an illustration for the, I guess it's a nursery rhyme, The Owl and the Pussycat. And I copied a Jim Christensen style because I'm like, well, if this is the way for success, I'm just going to pick an artist and I'm just going to use his style. And I rock this thing. I wish everybody was watching on YouTube where I'd show the illustration, but everyone in my class was blown away. Then I started hearing things like, looks a lot like a Jim Christensen, you know.
It's always disheartening when you think nobody's going to notice, right? And then they just throw it out.
Exactly. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, it does. Cause I copied like you jerks did, you know? And my teacher was like, hold on. Here's the thing. He didn't copy a Jim Christensen painting. He copied the style. And that's a step up. Now, you can't make a living copying the style either, but you're definitely on the right trajectory. And that's a thing that we try to teach our students at svslearn.com, which is a great place to learn illustration, right?
Oh, that's right.
Right.
You totally give away your hand with a laugh.
I can't pull it off. But no, we have a lot of students that the idea of making a master copy or, you know, copying a style for a while as an exercise is a foreign idea. But it's a very smart way to work. And I'm sure when you did your murals, you probably looked at the way other people were solving.
Oh, I had to. I had no history of painting. I mean, like I said, I'd done 3-4 paintings at most.
Right.
And they were all 8x10. This is going to be 120 feet wide. There's another phase of my career that I haven't thought about since then, too, that happened right after that. Once I got the scholarship, I moved down to L.A. And I'm just crazy aggressive because now I'm in school and now – I don't have an income, and I wasn't going to do graphic design. It takes too much time and effort while I was in school. So I was just looking for any art jobs. I'm an artist now, I was thinking. And so, so I answered this want ad for artists to paint live at a restaurant where you're on stage and there's just all this spotlights and stuff on you. And I was like, I'm the guy for that. And so I got the job. And so I came in with just a blank canvas and the, you know, those basics from Liquitex, those basics acrylics, like a new set of acrylics. And just started painting. I did that for like 3 months. I would come in twice a week and I would paint for the people who were eating, like a zoo animal entertainment.
It's like the guy that plays piano.
Yeah,
you know, at a restaurant.
Exactly right. And you know, it was good though, because A, most people don't have the guts to do that, and most people don't have the, you know, I'm talking about the people eating. Like they don't know that I'm a terrible artist at that point. And so just the fact that I'm there slinging paint, literally, they would come up and they would be drunk. Which is a huge bonus, by the way, because they're just amazed that you're creating something, no sketch, no lay-in, just painting. And they'd come up and they'd ooh and ah. And it was just a big ego boost. I would sit there and talk to them while I'm painting and they'd ask me questions. And I'm just making it all up. Like, there's no history there. And some of the paintings were terrible. Some of the paintings were actually kind of interesting. But I had forgot, and then I worked for food. I got comp tickets for food at the restaurant, And so sometimes my wife would meet me after work, and I'd have paint all over me, and we would sit there at the restaurant and eat. And sometimes they'd hang my painting up. And people would, there was one time.
It'd just be in the alleyway in the back.
Yeah, that's true. Probably deserved to be. But sometimes people would commission me, which is really funny. The diners would, there was this one, I remember this really drunk guy slurring his whole time. And he's just, yeah, such a great artist. And he really loved Scarface, the movie Scarface. So he commissioned me to do this Scarface portrait. And it's the first, mm-hmm. I guess, real commission other than the billboards that mm-hmm. have ever been given. And so I got his number and, you know, went back home, took no deposit or anything like that. I didn't even ask him what size he wanted. I just go home and drew Scarface straight off of a photo, of course, like anybody would.
The say hello to my little friend that.
Oh, no. That was what I think it was him in front of the desk with all the drugs in front of him. I was super proud of it because I'd never done a likeness before, like a realistic kind of drawing. So that was probably one of my first kind of realism attempts at realism. And then, you know, I'm calling the guy, I was done with it. I framed it and I was like super stoked. I'm like, I painted something that looks real and this guy's going to pay me for it. And the guy had no recollection of it at all. So I just totally ate it. He didn't buy it. He's like, I don't know who you are. I don't know what you're talking about. he was just drunk when he commissioned it.
That's hilarious.
But it gave me a lot of confidence to do that.
You got his number and everything.
Yeah.
Right? Like, well, how do I have your number?
Yeah.
Nope.
Leave me alone, stalker.
I didn't even like Scarface.
But all these things add up to together, you know what I mean? It's not just one of them, but you know, it's enough people giving you the nod to just get you to that next base. You know what I mean? I almost see it as like lily pads or bases, and you're just like jumping from base to base. And you're getting a little better. You're getting a little more recognition.
I think you're right about that saying, like, if there's people in your life, not cheerleaders, but like actual people who, you know, who maybe aren't relatives or friends, but people in your life who are willing to pay you or give you a tip on like, hey, you should go do this thing. You should try this thing out. That's like a huge sign that you're going in the right direction. And I had that thing when I showed my portfolio to my high school art teacher. And this was a couple years after I left high school. And I came back and I was like, hey, I've been working on art. You know, I was just touching base with him because he was such a like influential person in my life. And we were catching up and I showed him my portfolio. And he's like, I wouldn't give anybody this advice, Jake, but I will tell you now, you should go apply at the animation studio. I think they could hire you. And he's like, everyone else, you know, normally I would just say, stay in school, go graduate. But he's like, looking at your portfolio, I really think you could land this job. And that was a huge like confidence boost in me to have that coming from someone who I knew wasn't, you know, was telling me the truth and was going to, you know, sort of point me in the right direction without worrying about my feelings or, you know, trying to like boost me, you know?
Yeah. And it was different. You didn't seek him out saying, hey, point me in the direction of a job. This was coming from him. So I do think that little distinction makes a difference. Not that you shouldn't ask people for jobs and stuff, because you got to be kind of forward, you know, you got to look for the opportunity where it is. But yeah, I see what you're saying. Just little nods in the right direction.
Yeah. So Will, should we call this good, or do you
want to unpack this a little bit? I got one I want to share.
Let's do it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's hear it.
Well, when I was in, this is going back to school again, I was in my senior year and I had just started to kind of hit my stride a little bit. I think I've talked about this on other podcasts where I wasn't getting it. And because I was trying to be original and do my own thing and, you know, I was let into the BFA program on probation. They were like, you have one semester or we're kicking you out, you know? So I'm all of a sudden, all my other classmates are looking down on me and like, well, at least we're not you, you know, like, you know, and so towards the end of that semester, we had an art director come in from a magazine. It was actually part of a foundation out here called the Covey Leadership, and they had an actual monthly magazine. And they had an article they wanted illustrated, and they said, we're going to present this to your class, and we're going to come back and jury, you know, we're going to critique them for the final, and then we're going to pick one and print it in the magazine. So when I heard that, I was like, because I really, at this time, I was like, okay, I don't have anything that I'm good at, and and until this year, I wasn't good at art, you know, like, but now I was kind of starting to hold my own, and I was starting to find my footing, and I was getting decent grades in illustration. I figured my spot was pretty safe. So when they came in to give the assignment, the article was on, when your kids are lazy and kind of sleeping in your basement and won't leave, you know, your adult children, you know, and they grow up and they just won't leave and they don't have jobs and they're just kind of down there gaming and doing different things and stuff. So I'm like, I started watching what everyone was sketching in the class, and everyone was kind of narrating this teenage, or, you know, young 20-year-old kid. And I thought, I can't afford to do something that just fits in with what everybody else is doing. I have to do something totally different that's either going to fail or succeed. And I remember thinking, you know, these art directors are going to come back in. I want to make them laugh. Mm-hmm. I want to wake them up and shake them up. And I've always kind of been like that in my life. And so I started brainstorming ideas, what will make them laugh. And I, all of a sudden the idea hit me. What if I actually draw an actual couch potato, like an actual potato, you know, that's watching TV, that's holding the remote with like maybe one of those little spindly little root things growing out, you know, and you know, potatoes have eyes. So I thought, well, maybe I'll make little beady eyes, lots of them watching TV. And I had the glow of the TV, and I got really good reference, and I just worked really hard and created this illustration. And they came in, and it was like I saw them really stop on mine and start laughing, and I was like, "That's a good sign."
You know? There we go.
Yeah, and then they went.
People gather around your work.
Yeah, they went through one. and they critiqued everybody, and then they kind of came back to mine and said, "Hey, who's the guy that did this one?" You know, and raise my hand and like, yeah, we think we might be able to work with this one. So, and that was my first job that I ever had printed, and I got paid, you know, they paid for it. So that was a real confidence booster. And so, you know, for Pavel asking this question on, you know, what was it like in the beginning rounds when you lacked confidence and stuff? I don't know. I think there's a combination of working hard and working smart, and, you know, working hard doesn't always do it. You know, go back to the analogy of digging a hole with a spoon. That's working hard, but that's working really stupid. And a lot of times we get caught up in working hard, but we're not thinking about what we can actually do to jump ahead of the pack, you know? And for me, it was taking a step back and looking like, what is everybody else going to do? Okay, I don't want to do that. I don't want to fit in. And the problem with a lot of artists are we're creative up to a point, and then we get scared and we get safe. And art should never be safe, right? Art should be the definition of you know, living dangerously and being provocative and making people think and waking people up out of their normal lives and saying something, right?
Right.
Right.
You got to take risks to make something great. Yeah. You know what I mean? You can't hide behind it. Can I say, are you done with that, Will? Because yeah, I want to segue on that.
Yeah.
There's something I think that's important that I just kind of thought of during how people might be hearing this podcast. And that's that maybe this path was easy for us that, oh, I mean, Jake like accidentally gets a job at a animation studio. And I just accidentally got a job doing these billboards. I do want to emphasize that there are failures along the way that we're not really talking about. And so something I always say in my classes, and I also say this in my golf game, is celebrate your success and forget the failures. And so that's why we're sort of leaving that off, because there's these dips where it didn't work out and something didn't pan out. And you really do have to just be resilient there and then pay attention to the success. One of the first jobs I had once I was done with art center and college, and I was starting to hit the New York circuit and stuff, trying to meet people and get this whole thing going. Nobody had talked to us about self-publishing. That was right when self-publishing was just starting. And there was this person that was looking through the Art Center job boards, trying to find an illustrator for their self-published book. Well, I got the book. So there's my success. Yay, somebody acknowledged me out of all these people who applied for it, especially that group at Art Center. So I felt really good. And then I did like my first round of sketches and I lost the job. They didn't like what I did. And it turns out they were total amateurs. They didn't know how to work with an illustrator. Nothing was my fault. No, I'm just kidding. It was probably half and half. I'm trying to do exactly what I want to get really cool images, not really paying attention to what the person is asking me for. And then she's not a very good art director. And so I lost the job. And so it was really kind of disheartening when I came out. And, you know, and I think there's just a lot of these dips. And you just move on to the next one and just completely forget about it. But yeah. I pay attention to these little successes and just forget the failures.
I think you have to. Oh, go ahead, Jake.
Well, I was just going to talk about a couple of some hiccups I had too, in that pathway. Because when the animation studio closed down, Disney came out, DreamWorks came out. They were all like searching for people they could, you know, take from the studio and bring to their studios. And I did animation tests, I did interviews, and nothing came from that. Everyone was like, "No thanks, keep going." You know. Go learn how to do this better and then call us, you know, call us in a couple of years. And then I remember even like applying to a video game studio in Phoenix. There were two or three of them and they came back and are like, yeah, you're just not there yet, you know? And so it wasn't for lack of trying that I didn't get an art job and just decide to go do this call center job. This was like, I was like, really, like, I guess this is it. There's no work out there for me as an artist right now. But there is if I'm willing to not work for Disney or DreamWorks or, you know, this cool video game studio. But if I'm willing to work a hot summer outside building stuff, you know, for a museum, right? And I think that's kind of the key is part of it, your own success, you have to make yourself. Mm-hmm. Like you have to be willing to scrub and scrounge and find, you know, find these little like table scraps that are still creative, that are still going to help you advance your career, but are still scraps nonetheless.
Yeah. I know Nate Hale, he writes and illustrates graphic novels. If you want to look him up. He does a series called Hazardous Tales, but his first job was working for a museum, and you don't think of museums hiring artists full time, but that's what he did. He did all kinds of artwork for the museum.
Yeah, he did these amazing murals for the Utah Museum of Natural History, or the one at Thanksgiving Point. Yeah. Like if you're ever in Utah and you want to see some sites, make that museum like high on your list, the one at Thanksgiving Point, because not only is it a cool museum, it's probably the largest collection of dinosaur exhibits, I think, in the country.
It's cool.
But also it just has really cool paintings.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are weird jobs everywhere and we, as artists, we tend to take it hard when we get rejection. Like I got fired from one of my first art jobs. I was trying to be a graphic designer, didn't know what I was doing. After like 2 weeks, they're just like, "Hey, sorry." And it hurt. That hurt more than anything else. Cause I'm like, this is the thing I'm trying to do, you know?
Right.
But one skill that I think a lot of successful artists have is they're just glass half full people to begin with. And so they just pick themselves up and just go, "I'm going to keep going and I'm going to just overestimate my abilities." We have that trait in common too, right?
Yeah, you have to. You have to. But it's a weird balancing act. There should be some successes. There probably will be some failures. But it can't be all one of, you know, it can't be all on one of those things and none of the other.
Yeah.
And what I think of when I think of that kind of balance and what I want to avoid is the American Idol situation where you have somebody come up and they're going to be a singer. They want to be the next Whitney Houston or whatever. They always like Whitney Houston. And they get up there and they belt out a song and it sounds like two cats fighting. They're so bad. And the judges say they're so bad. And then they think they're really good. So how do you avoid that syndrome as well?
Ooh, that's a good...
Yeah, well, I think it goes back to that. That's a good question.
Well, that's why I think it has to be balanced with these little kernels of success. Otherwise, if it's all people saying, hey, man, this is not working, this isn't good, this isn't good, this isn't good, and nobody's gathering around your work, nobody's offering you recommendations, nobody's giving you a scholarship, and you're not being paid ever, it's a signal that something's wrong, and doesn't mean quit, but it maybe means you need to retool.
I think you need to be good at consuming the product that you're trying to create and understanding and valuing it from the pros. So in other words, when you're talking about American Idol, actually, I think some of those people are grandstanding to get on camera. I don't think all of them believe what they're, you know,
it's like TV. I mean, yeah, right. You're probably
it's a
right.
way to kill an after.
But I have met artists that can't, you know, like this is a hard concept to explain, but the stuff that I valued as a student is stuff that I look at now and go, yikes, I don't like that stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that the three of us, if we were going through and sharing our favorite artists, it would be hard pressed for you guys to show me one of your favorite artists that I wouldn't see a lot of value in, and vice versa. But if the student, Will Terry, showed you who I was looking at now, you'd be like, don't look at them. They're not good, right? So we're seeing two different things where our tastes have to develop along the way. And I think some artists get stuck in the beginning of following the wrong people and not having a good sense of taste. And I think that comes over time.
Yeah.
You know? I think there's that. I think also your taste can develop ahead of your skill too.
It's yeah.
Like, you know what's good.
Yeah.
That's famous NPR. Was it This American Life guy?
Yeah, Ira Glass.
Ira Glass did that thing on cultivating a creative practice. And that was one of his big concepts is your mind grows faster than your skill set.
Yeah.
And
it's true.
But your tastes also change. I was going to say, like, if you look around and the only people who appreciate your work is your mom and your really nice aunt and, you know, your little brother,
your dog.
Who's five. And then what you need to do then is take that work and show it to people who don't know who you are, who have no vested interest in what happens to you, and get their feedback. And I think that's why the internet is really powerful, because people are brutal and they're going to tell you exactly what they think. And that can be the best thing to happen to you as a creator, because it's going to finally let you know where you stand in relation to professionals.
Yeah.
And if there is something good, you'll get a response from people. People will like it. If there's something bad, you'll get a response from people and they'll tell you, go home, this is not for you, which is absolutely something you might need to hear to either double down, work harder at it, or to realize, oh, well, maybe I don't like this as much as I thought I did, and I should go pursue something else that will make me happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, contests are a great place to test out things, try different styles, see what happens. You know, we run a contest at SVS Learn in the forums that, you know, we have a contest every month, and there's a whole group of runner-ups. There's a winner and a second place person as well. I think we've changed it a couple times, so I don't even really know what we're doing. but there's like 13 people that get acknowledged, which is a high percentage. And, you know, if you shoot for being one of those, you know, 8, 10, 12, 13 people, you'll know you're kind of moving in the right direction. If it never gets picked, then maybe you try something different. So, you know, it's just a place to play, and we're not the only game in town either, but it's a low risk way to put your work in an arena where you can see it, and it's impartial. The judges don't know who you are. And you get to see your work in the same criteria where everybody else. That's what I like about a contest versus just a regular portfolio crit, because a regular portfolio crit, while being very valuable, is it's so personalized that you don't get to see kind of a bigger context. But you enter a contest that has a theme, all of a sudden now you're within the same context as everybody else. It's a level playing field, and you get to step up, and if it doesn't work, then you change it the next time and see how that works.
Awesome.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. Well, let me wrap it up.
I knew it'd be right at an hour. We always said it. It's every one of these is like an hour. We don't plan this, by the way. We aren't watching the clock or anything, but it's always an hour.
That's when we just run out of steam.
It's sick.
All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. 3-Point Perspective is made possible by svslearn.com. We're becoming a great illustrator starts. And your hosts today have been Will Terry. It was his topic today. Good topic, Will. You can find his work at willterry.com and follow him on Instagram at willterryart on Instagram there. We have Lee White, and his website is leewhiteillustration.com, and you can find his work on Instagram at leewhiteillo. And I'm Jake Parker. You can find my work at mrjakeparker.com and follow me on Instagram at Jake Parker. Podcast is edited by Alex Sugg. That's Sugg with 2 G's. And our show notes are done by Tanner Garlick. The illustration for this episode today is done by one of our SVS subscribers, Carissa Green. And you can find her work at carissaillustrates.com. So if you like this episode, please share it around. We get a lot of people listening because people share something they like about the episode. Share it on Twitter. Share it on Facebook. Share it wherever you can. Share it in person. Just send someone a link in a text that says, check out this podcast. We really appreciate it. And if you're wanting to get in on this discussion, log on to svslearn.com forums. Where we have posted this episode with a discussion topic, its own thread there. So chime in over there and let us know what you think, or if you have any other questions about it. All right, thank you, everybody, and we will see you next time. Bye.